Hey, how's it going? It's Tim Brown, and this is the Plumbing and HVAC Hustle Podcast. And today I'm with Michelle Van Beek of E3 and Profit Rocket. How you doing?
Great. Thank you so much for having me. Such an honor.
This is take two. We're in Disney, and it's a little kind of loud around. And we are talking about operational processes and responsibilities to support profitability.
Yes, yes.
Would you
Excellent topic.
Sharing like a 2-minute version of your background?
Of course, I'm gonna make it shorter on take on take two.
Okay.
But I've been in the trades for 9 years. Always very focused on high level leadership and being a COO. I've done multiple acquisitions. I worked, you know, smaller companies, larger companies, and I've always just had this passion for helping others. Because I was very blessed in my 9 years to be a part of like almost every best practice group, I've really taken, you know, the best of the best and tried it out, trial error, but figured out what worked the best and able to put my spin on it and just created this massive knowledge base. You know, like I just had so much knowledge in my brain, you know, that I wasn't really able to like tap in and use. So becoming a business coach and giving back to contractors was also, you know, a way that I could grow, but I could help a lot of people in the trades. And so I got into business coaching, speaking, and, you know, just in being very immersed into the trades, you know, from a different perspective, I really saw that, you know, I wasn't the only female in the trades that wasn't ever supported or that didn't have, you know, the community. Mm-hmm. And that just kind of made this passion just grow and grow inside of me and think of how can I really like give purpose to my passion and really help other women in the trade. So a little over a year ago, Victor and I were throwing a free event for women, you know, just to give back. And really, I realized through some political issues during planning that, you know, this was the opportunity that there was a need, you know, for more support for women of our trades and to bring more women into the trades and really give them the support and the tools that they need to be successful and then get them placed into really good jobs. So
political issue?
Yeah, some political issues.
Like industry political or?
Yeah, really, without going into too much detail.
Just a little detail.
Yeah, just to spice it up.
Just between us girls.
Yeah. Well, there has been, you know, this perception and kind of experience of like mean girl stuff, you know, where we're not being very inclusive and it kind of turns into this like man bashing party, which obviously being partnered with a man, you know, in business, I just really didn't like, you know, how we're going and saying to men, you know, you can't support us because you haven't supported us historically. And that between that and the clickiness really just kind of was a very big turnoff, you know, to me. And then also, you know, I've been a high level leader for almost 9 years in the trades and I had never been invited into any other female, you know, support group. And I just thought like, okay, clearly there's a need, right? And, you know, it's not always about bending to go along with the rules. Sometimes you have to just create your own rules. And
let's go.
That's what I decided to do. So, I mean, it's really great. Although I support every other, you know, women's group that there is out there, I really wanted to make sure that, you know, I could create something that was very inclusive and that would create a lot of other opportunity for females in the trade. So between that and helping other business owners by doing business coaching, you know, I've just really been able to fulfill my passion that way.
I love to hear it. All right, let's talk about profitability. I'm going to lead this with a question that I think is extremely interesting. It's what is the order of your suggested first 5 hires for newer HVAC companies, plumbing companies?
Yes, I love it so much. This is a great question. And I'll go specifically with like office support, that side, because generally, obviously, we know we need installers to install. We need technicians to run calls. Those are the given ones, right? But people always say, okay, when can I hire and who do I hire next? And that's that's really important, because who you hire either makes or breaks, you know, the profitability in your business. And it's really important for you to hire revenue producing roles, not revenue sucking roles. So when you're thinking about, you know, I'm $2 million and I'm going to hire 10 managers, you know, that's not the best advice that I have to give you. You don't need an install manager. You don't need a service manager. You don't need a freaking warehouse manager and a tire, fuel, and truck maintenance manager. Like, what are you thinking? No. And in fact, I like the roles that double as those management roles. I'm really big on creating built-in accountability and driving that profitability. So you have to create roles that support that from an operational side. So for instance, first off, you're gonna bring in a CSR to answer the phones. And then very shortly after that, you're gonna need a dispatcher, because those are two totally different roles. And if you don't understand how important those are, especially from, you know, a marketing perspective, like, you know, your marketing company can give you all the leads in the world, but if you don't know how to properly handle it, they don't travel operationally down the right pipeline, like you're never gonna be successful. You know, and then it starts the finger pointing for marketers. You know,
no, it happens. If you ever sat down to listen to a good 100 calls in a row from home service businesses, it's surprising how many bad bad phone call answering skills are out there.
Oh, but, yeah. Or if you do, you know, you do get them booked, and then you're assigning wrong technician to that call, or you're just failing in the field, you know, again, the finger pointing. Mm-hmm. Listen, I'm very, very, very a no bullshit business coach. Yeah. Like, I mean, I don't sugarcoat things. If you want things sugarcoated, you know, go to a donut store. That's not me, okay? Yeah. I'm very transparent, and I'm very good at educating my clients about, like, their responsibility when it comes to, you know, marketing. So just so you know, hope that matters from being a marketing.
Oh, it matters a lot. Side. Yeah, no, it's always.
I'm not a big. I'm like, listen. There's only, when marketing fails, there's only two options. It's either the marketing that's failing or it's operational failure. Mm-hmm. And you have to know when it's your fault. From a contractor side, you know.
And so, I'm not saying it's never an agency's fault. I'm not saying it's never our fault.
No, but they'll blame you no matter what.
Yeah.
So I do my best to educate on that side, which is why I feel, you know, understanding how important the difference between customer service and dispatch roles are really helps you aid in maximizing the most opportunity, you know, especially from a lead generation standpoint. And then next up is install coordinator. That's a big one. And that surprises a lot of people, because, you know, they think, oh, I have to have, you know, 3 install crews or 4 install crews or 5 install crews. But I argue that. And the reason why is that job is very diverse, and it covers a lot of different things that you're getting your money's worth. But what it also does is allows customer service, dispatch, and even the business owner to really laser focus on their jobs. Generally, you know, they're all collectively like, oh, you ordered the equipment. Oh, wait, I already ordered it, and this, that, and the next thing. And who made the job folder? And did we follow up with the customer? Did we even collect? You know, whatever. It just becomes this entire nightmare. And really, you should be having an install coordinator who's not only coordinating installs, but also is processing payments, setting an expectation with the client. They're making the job folders. They're doing any warranties, processing finance. They are doing job costing, daily job costing, to ensure that you're priced to be profitable.
Because a lot of people will put that responsibility on the techs or like the selling,
or the business owner, okay, or they don't do it at all. And that's the worst thing you could do. Mm. Or they do it monthly and I believe fully you should do it daily. Mm. I need to know if I'm winning or losing every day. I'm not waiting until the end of the month and then taking 2 weeks to do job costing for an entire month. Mm. And then what good is that going to do? How am I going to, I can't change the past. I can only intervene in the now. And that's what's really important. You can also have, you know, that person doing commission calculating, right? They know what happened on the job. They know if the comfort advisor missed something completely or didn't charge enough or whatever. And I don't want to be paying full commissions. That's not how you're profitable if you're paying full commissions and you're losing your ass, right? Mm-hmm. So that role is very, very important also. And then call by call management, right?
Is this fifth? Is call by call? I think it might be fourth.
Yeah, I think it's fourth. Call by call management is huge. Mm-hmm. You know, you want to make
sure. Can you explain that for somebody who didn't know a call by call management real quick?
Of course.
I know most
course.
People do, but.
No, I mean, honestly, I don't know if everybody does.
Okay.
I don't know, because you know, it was a new concept not too long ago.
Yeah, it feels like it's fresh to the industry. But
well, it's fresh with people starting to actually like jump on board and do it well. Mm-hmm. So I'll definitely give you
it's
that.
It's definitely new for a lot of HVAC contractors. Even if they've heard of it, they have a lot of them haven't done it yet. So
oh yeah, and I've done a ton of webinars, because most people, like, even if they've heard of it, they have no idea how the hell to do it.
Yeah.
Or what that means. So call by call management is basically somebody who is watching the call board, doing check-ins, or having the technician check in with them so that they could intervene in the call right then and there. A lot of, you know, for a lot of years, the industry's really pushed rehashing, which rehash is great, but the success rate of going back and selling something once you've left is minimal compared to intervening in the middle of the call, right? Your close rate, your, you know, maximizing that call mm-hmm. is going to jump up tremendously while you're still out there. Mm-hmm. So basically, it allows you to do real-time coaching throughout the call. So there's different touch points that the calls are, or that the technicians are required to send you X, Y, and Z information. So then if they're in the home, when they're about to present, they've already spoken to the call-by-call manager or coach, some people call call-by-call coach, and then they've gotten fresh perspective on how to pitch this to the customer.
What revenue, sorry, this is a very specific question, but what revenue level is call by call really make sense for? Because obviously it's very hard to do this super early, right?
Yeah, but I would argue that, you know, you're up to, you know, three technicians and you're already ready to go.
Okay. Like,
because also this person is going to double as a sales manager also at first. You know, you can have them going in and coaching, doing the same thing with your comfort advisors. Mm-hmm. So instead of, you know, having to run, and then this also goes back into, you know, marketing dollars spent too, because you think about if you have a higher average ticket, a higher close rate, all of those things, you don't have to run as many calls, you know, to make the exact same profit. Mm-hmm. And that is going to drive your profitability also. But this person, you know, is coaching them real time when they go into the house. And then even better, you have them calling you on speakerphone if the technician is going to get a $0 ticket. Mm-hmm. So then they're able to identify what went wrong mm-hmm. with the customer. And a lot of times it's not about price. You know, you find out that your technicians are creepers that way. You find out that they're being offensive. You find out, you know, that they don't know what they're talking about. They're confusing. They give too much information, whatever the case is. And then guess what happens? You get less bad reviews.
Mm-hmm.
And that will...
Because there's accountability.
Yeah, because... And then you're catching it on the back end instead of waiting until the review, you mm-hmm. know, the review hits and you got a 1-star review on Google, which you don't want. So that call or that position is very, very important. But I will say this, because this is the biggest hindrance to this being successful, is you have to be consistent. This isn't something that you can say, oh, we're going to do it this week, but not this week. And then I don't really have time. Like, this is a full time position that you have to be so consistent mm-hmm. with. And I think that that's where we fail with call-by-call management most of the time. I've failed, you know. First time I tried to implement call-by-call management, like, I wasn't consistent enough. And I didn't realize, I was like, okay, this is crap. Mm-hmm. Like, who created call-by-call management? This is stupid.
Yeah.
But it didn't go away, unfortunately. Yeah. In the trades, it just started becoming more prominent. And then I thought, well, shoot, I need to step up my game. Hmm. So I finally got it on lock. Lastly, I would say... aside from obviously, you know, bringing in another CSR to where you have a lead and, you know, just a regular CSR, I would say is definitely like a warehouse facilitator that doubles as a parts runner also. So you have somebody who's actually, you know, checking the orders in, you have them staging the installs, you know, ensuring that everybody's prepped on what's going on. And then they're also are able to run parts, you know, as you begin to scale a little bit. Those are the most important roles. I'm, like I said, I really don't like service managers and install managers and sales managers, because ultimately they're sucking out a huge salary mm-hmm. and they're not actually going and producing revenue.
Yeah, I just think about functional roles that also have leadership in the responsibilities.
Yeah.
Like, that's, I think, like,
it's huge.
It's hard to have a business. Like, every time I add a layer of management, it's like, it's a lot of, I like people that do work and then
yes.
also manage a bit.
Yeah, so here's the kind of like trick there. And I would argue this, you know, to 15 million easily, that you don't need those roles. And here's why, because like for service management, you have your dispatcher who's covering the customer side of the equation. You have your call by call manager that's covering the sales and performance side of it. For install, you have your install coordinator and a lead or a head installer. And that person is still going out and doing installs every day, but they can do technical training before you start for the day. They can, you know, help with problem solving throughout the day. They're getting paid more, but they're still out there, you know, running calls and doing installs every
day. They can haze the young employees.
Yeah, of course. No, they can push the new helpers down on the ground. Just kidding. Don't do that. But also then there's a technical advisor. The biggest mistake that a lot of people make is they, you know, take their best technician who's so knowledgeable and who performs and they turn him into a service manager. You can't do that at all. But if you have somebody who has that technical aptitude, they can solve anything, and they always tend to like gravitate towards leading. Without the title, then they're perfect to make them the technical advisor, because then you take the oftentimes the owner out of the equation as far as having to field all those calls. So they could still go and run the calls that like nobody else wants to run or they can't figure out, because they're getting paid appropriately to do so. But then they're also fielding all the technical questions and calls, even for install, if they get stuck during a startup or something. So building in those roles where they're actually leading and fulfilling all the management duties, but they're still driving the revenue, driving the profitability, that's huge. And that's the trick when you think about hiring, is like, think, how can I build in accountability, but still, you know, be profitable? And so that's what I always advise when you think about who you hire and when you hire them.
I love that.
He does is he teaches the most valuable team in your business. He'll just add nothing but profit.
There's so much money left in the call center. So much money. If you're not at a 90% booking rate, showing empathy on the phone, smiling on the phone, making sure they're having a better day after they got off the phone with you, then you need to call Power Selling Pros and Sebring.
I feel like we were covering a little bit of the org chart stuff there. So my next question is going to be around, what are the best payment structures for profitability?
Yeah, so I always, it's funny, actually, on my way over here, I got a call from one of our customers and or one of our, you know, clients with Profit Rocket, and they wanted to know, like, hey, like, I have a office manager-ish role and then a field manager role, and they wanted, you know, they want to get some revenue sharing going. And I'm like, no, we're not gonna structure it that way, and here's why. The best type of structures are revolved around profitability, right? So if you're able to create, even for the field staff, you know, you create a baseline for gross profit, and then you say any points that you can exceed over this baseline, you'll get X amount, X percentage of the excess, you know, of anything you've increased.
Job.
Yeah, well, or even if you're looking at it from like a monthly perspective.
Okay, great.
Now when we're talking,
yeah, I feel like that's easier to track.
Yeah, so and this would be more so for like those leadership roles.
Yeah.
Again, same thing, like if you have somebody who's, you know, GM or somebody who's just running, you know, running the show without that title in the office, again, you can base it upon the company profitability with doing like, okay, benchmarks. Our benchmark for expenses, total expenses, so below the line cost of operating business, is 30%. Any point that you are able to decrease it below 30%, I'll give you, you know, 5 to 10% of, you know, that difference. So the company is still winning. They're massively winning, but then you can reward your employees too. You never base anything off top line revenue. When we look at more so the field staff, which I'm assuming that you're referring to, comfort advisors or technicians, we want to base it upon, you know, again, ensuring that we're profitable. We have to understand that, and knowing your numbers is just so huge, because you have to understand what it costs to operate your business on a daily basis. So how much is it actually costing for my technician to go out, you know, into the field every month? And how much do they have to make in order for us to, you know, be okay? And anything that they exceed over that, great. Let's give them a percentage of whatever that is. And then for the sales, it's the same thing. I want commissions calculated. I want to make sure that I am, you know, paying commissions, but I'm doing it if the company's making money, right? Mm-hmm. Like you have a book price. If you choose to discount it more than what is allotted or approved, or if you miss a return, if you, you know, throw in an air scrubber, if you do all these things that are going to make the company not profitable, I can't pay you a full commission. Mm-hmm. I can't. And so just designing pay structures around profitability is huge. And again, it's all, you know, that built-in accountability and built-in profitability that you really have to focus on.
All right, so we're going to do a little intermission with some of our ongoing series. The first one is sponsored by Power Selling Pros.
Nice.
And it's called Money in the Phones. I don't know if you know those guys, but
yes, I do. They're great.
Money in the Phones. What is a system that you would recommend regarding answering the phones that would help improve people's profitability and or just their call-in systems?
Well, this is something that I 100% every time give credit to Uncle Joe for. I love the way that they do call scoring. That's huge. You know, you gotta ask the right questions every single time. You have to score the call. And then, you know, when it comes to dispatching, I want the best of the best calls. So if I get in, you know, a top score call, I'm bumping the lower score calls. I mean, you have to overbook. You have to make sure that you know what's happening on every call. And this is why we separate customer service and dispatch, because customer service is the emotional, fluffy, nice, connecting with the customer person. And dispatch is like calculated. Like how do we drive as much profitability as possible and make sure the right tech is on the right call, which is huge. So Uncle Joe does that system like insanely well. And I 100% teach and support that.
Love it. And the next one is called Hot Takes and Cold Trends. And okay. Hot takes, I'm sure you know what a hot take is, being with Victor.
I'm like, in what perspective? What? Yeah, give me some context.
How hot is this take? So basically anything that maybe other folks in the industry might find controversial, I would like to hear your perspective. Like, and if you can bring some realness to this, I would love it. And then cold trends is just anything people are spending time. We already talked about management, too many layers of management, but anything.
That's huge.
People are spending too much time, money, energy, or effort on that they should stop.
Oh, this is good. Yeah. I like it. Oh, hot take. Okay. What's controversial? Can I pick Victor Rancourt?
No, just Yeah.
I'm just kidding. I don't know. I don't know what's controversial. And I mean, a lot of things,
what's something that you think that a lot of contractors might disagree with you on, but you really strongly believe it?
Oh, I just talked about this on a podcast recently. So here we go again, but, leadership, like contractors being in their own way. Like I literally have to get, like, I'm giving contractors shaken baby syndrome for like, you know, a living, because it's like, they don't realize that they are in their own way, that they have, you know, built their business on a leadership foundation, not leadership foundation.
How are they dropping the ball on leadership? Like a pattern you've seen.
Yeah, patterns are like, well, first of all, like, you know, blaming their employees for everything. It is my employees' fault that I didn't reach my revenue goal, or that I wasn't profitable, or that, you know, we don't do well enough on our calls, or this, that, or the next thing. Like, first of all, if you are a good leader, you would never deflect blame. Ever. You would take responsibility, because at the end of the day, whether it's your fault or it's not your fault, it's your fault as a leader. And then a lot of times limiting beliefs. Mm-hmm. You know, they 100% believe that it can't be done because of this, or, you know, they're afraid to do it because of whatever. Like, it's always a excuse. Mm-hmm. You know, and it's hard to tell a contractor, like, you're the problem. But, you know, I've gotten really good at it.
Well, yeah, it was usually us.
So maybe, like, I'm the controversial topic that I didn't realize. But no, that is what it is.
As a business owner, if I ever find myself in that like pattern of I'm frustrated with my employees and I'm not taking responsibility, I basically am saying I don't want to grow.
Exactly.
Like, if it's their fault, I'm not going to grow.
Yeah. Or you're saying like
I don't have responsibility, or I can't take responsibility. Yeah.
Exactly, and it's crazy because I see it all the time where it's like, you know, you don't even realize you're the problem. It's like, if you don't know what being in your own way is, you're probably in your own way. And that's a sad fact.
What about cold trends? What's something you think people are wasting time, money, energy, or effort on that they should stop?
Oh man, well, I think a lot of the management, we did cover that already, but that's a huge thing. Also flying blind, you know, like we, without knowing, you know, people throw money at problems. That's a huge thing. And so it is, I mean, so it's like, instead of taking the time, and I think this very much so goes with, you know, not being a good leader, but instead of taking the time to understand my numbers or track marketing ROI or do job costing or whatever, I'm just gonna like throw more money at things, you know. I'll just throw more money at marketing stuff that doesn't work, or
marketing is one of those things. You can spend a lot of money that's not getting anything back.
You can, and a lot of times it has nothing even to do with marketing agency. Mm-hmm. A lot of times it has to do with our own negligence. Mm-hmm. You know, oh, it's not working over here with them, so I'm going to throw a ton more money over here too, and here and here and here and here, and you know. So how do you blame the marketing company at that point, or the marketing agency?
You can blame us.
Well, they somehow find a way to, you know, and I'm not saying everybody's good at it, because certainly they're not, but I also, like I said, I do make them accept the responsibility for themselves. Also, another thing is throwing money at your employees, you know? Mm. Oh, if instead of being a good leader and putting operational processes, standards, core values in place and holding people accountable, every time my employee gets mad or they just don't do their job, I'm gonna throw more money at them.
That's tempting. And I will say, we were just talking to somebody and they're like hiring their first marketing person, and they're saying, Well, we're kind of saying, well, they might not be able to do everything, right? Because there's like 10 good, there's 10 important things in marketing, right? And they said, well, 80K. and 80K is not a bad salary. It's actually great, okay? But the point is just because you give somebody money doesn't mean they're going to live up to that salary.
No.
Like, giving them money doesn't make them better than what they were before.
No. It doesn't. And people do this all the time. And that's another thing, like, I'm glad that you kind of brought that up, because I just was thinking about, like, when people try to do like marketing in-house, like, I just have like a really, like, you want to talk about having roles that are a waste?
Yeah.
Like, that role is a waste, because to have somebody that would be that good that you could bring them in-house would cost you a fortune.
Yeah.
And so the likelihood of you finding somebody that's reasonable, that's really good at it, is very unlikely.
Like, okay, so I sometimes say like 8 million to 15 million. There might be like a chief delegator that could also run social or something like that.
Yes.
That's my take. But like, you're not going to, under 8 million from my point of view, you're probably not going to get a person that's good at all of the things. Because they're going to need to spend money too.
Exactly. And even the person who you have there at that point still outsources X, Y, and Z. Yeah. They're just managing it. Yeah. They're having the meetings with the marketing companies. There's like, if you have somebody who's actually doing the marketing in your business and you're not using actual, like, I stay in my lane, right? Like, marketing is not my lane. It is a beast that I don't ever want to take on, because there's just too many variables for me. So, you know, I give you the utmost credit for taking it on, but it's not easy. But, you know, trying to force that, I think that's something that we do a lot, is that we try to force, you know, a square peg into a round hole. It's like,
too many roles into one person.
No, and
that's scary. Like, it's, you have to do it at the beginning though, right?
Yes.
Like, at the very beginning, like, a lot of owners have to do some marketing themselves, and they're juggling
exactly,
five things.
Exactly, but you're doing like the free things or relatively inexpensive things.
And, like, it's
and
very
being
expensive.
Responsible. Yeah, it does. But it's like, if you're gambling that much money, like, I think about, you know, in months with Absolute, you know, we're spending $250,000-$300,000 on marketing every month. It's like, do you want to really throw that much money at somebody who's not experienced, who's like, you know, like, hey, here, you take care of this, Tim, and you have no idea what you're doing? Like, I would just never, like, it's crazy. Mm-hmm. It's just crazy to me. It's like, let the people who are really good at shit do their job, you know, and you just, like, get somebody to manage it.
All right, let's move on to the next one. What are some key numbers you think more contractors should focus on?
Benchmarks. industry benchmarks. That's what they are there for. You need to be able to, one, you need to have a very granular profit and loss statement. So you need to actually have everything departmentalized. It needs to be accurate, and you need to have it, you know, as close to real time as possible. But when you get that profit and loss statement, you gotta be able to like compare it to the industry benchmarks. That's what we have them for, because those are going to teach you, you know, enough about your numbers to understand where you are winning and where you are losing and what you need to change. And so it gives you even more visibility than just having your numbers. It helps you to understand them.
What else? Like, I love benchmarks. And where do you get those, by the way?
So, well, I mean, like at Profit Rocket, we really train and coach and teach on industry benchmarks. We have a business blueprint that literally has every tool that you need in order to grow a very profitable business. So, you know, obviously if you're looking to scale your business or become more profitable, checking out the blueprint just has all of the reports and the spreadsheets and the tools that you need in order to create that awareness within your business.
But you essentially will give like, hey, you're not living up to kind of average industry standard kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And is there like is there a kind of a cheaper earlier version of this, or is it like a full, is it just a full program?
We do actually have two different versions. So we have one that's more for the really small contractors, and it's just scaled down. Like, so you're not, instead of getting like a fire hose, you know, of information, we're giving you like a little bit less information, but it's easier for you to digest and put into your business. But yeah, I mean, I don't know if you ever give out tools with your podcast, but I mean, that's something we could,
oh,
I could give
that'd
you
be
the,
awesome. We'd love to link to it below. So we'll link to,
so we could do the benchmarks, because I really think that would be really,
oh, that'd be
valuable.
Amazing.
Yeah.
It'd be super cool. What are some like specific KPIs that maybe an average HVAC guy or plumbing company is not necessarily like aware that they should know? Like, I just got it. I'll be real. I just got into gross profit, and I'm not gonna lie, it's good.
Yes,
it's good.
Great.
Knowing about gross profit, and it's funny because literally a year ago, and this is so terrible, I have a okay sized company, but I just figured out the difference between gross and net profit.
Yeah,
so.
But this is why. And there's nothing wrong with that. Like, you don't know what you don't know, but this is exactly why I go on podcasts, why I step on stages, why I fill classrooms up, and I talk about financial awareness, because we don't know these things as an industry as a whole. Sorry. You know, so many people don't understand. When you say the line, before you just learned that, you would have never known what the hell the line is. Mm-hmm. You know, people don't know that's a gross profit line, and they don't understand what gross profit is anyway, right? Mm-hmm. So, I mean, as from a financial perspective, or do you want like KPIs, operations?
Yeah, just kind of like the types, of, not even specific numbers, but like gross profit, net profit.
Oh, yeah.
Like, what are the other ones?
So in order of the profit and loss statement, you know, obviously top line revenue, we all know that, because that's where the focus usually goes, which it shouldn't be. But
most
then,
contractors, that's all they care about. Because sometimes this is what we buy our boat on. No,
yeah, no, exactly. Yeah. It's like, oh, my vanity, because I got a big number up here. Yeah, but look at the little one down there. You know, it's important, right?
Yeah.
But we go revenue, and the next up is our cost of goods sold section. So we're looking at direct materials, direct labor, anything that's directly associated with performing the service that you're selling, right? And the next up is your gross profit line. Below that, we're looking at marketing percentage. And that is the vein of my existence. Absolutely no offense. It's because our contractors just spend and spend and spend, you know? So
what is your average recommendation for marketing percentage?
5 to 6%.
Oh, that's kind of tight.
Yeah, well, I'll hear me out on this.
Respectfully, no, I want to hear it. I don't want you to modify it for me, but I like
that. No, the reason being is I'm not talking dollar amounts, right? Yeah. I don't care. You spend $100,000, $10,000. I don't care about that. What I care about is the top line revenue, right? Mm-hmm. Because if you're driving that ROI and creating that top line revenue, that percentage is not wavering between 5 and 6%. So that's what's important. It's not about the dollar amount that you're spending. Spend all the money in the world, right? As long as you're getting the return on investment, it doesn't matter. So if you think about like...
So you don't recommend even as you go, because when you get large, that's a large number, right?
Yeah, like it's a huge number.
It goes crazy high up as you're getting up there, and you don't recommend like pulling it down as you get larger?
No, you don't have to. Obviously though, like in bigger months, you know, so like, let's say during your peak season months, you know, you're doing, you have naturally the demand that's already coming in. If you don't need to do marketing, you got your board full. Your board's full for weeks, you know, like you don't need to spend those dollars on marketing. But I'm just saying, don't exceed that in any given point.
I appreciate that.
And really, you have to look at it this way also. And this is like not for newer contractors, so cover your ears. But when you're going into more like branding, brand awareness kind of marketing, you know, so you're doing radio, billboards, television, those types of things, those aren't things you're going to see a return on investment very easily. So that's going to, you know, obviously affect the percentage of marketing. But, you know, at the end of the day, if you're still very profitable, I'm good with it, right? And that's a long-term play. So that's not something you do when you're just getting into it or you're still a smaller company.
I really believe that those long-term plays, like, and we are lead gen. So my company is lead generation, rubber hits the road, now stuff. But I think, and this goes against my business model, that everything to do with brand and long-term and awareness are actually the best ROI things once you get into that. If you can, but at the beginning, we don't have the luxury to be super soft and out there with brand.
And what Tim's basically saying is like, you have to have the working capital to be able to put in, to invest into long-term branding plays. Like, and that's okay when, you know, you have unlimited resources, but when you're first starting out, like you have to be very careful about where you spend your money at. And that's probably the biggest, most common mistake that I see contractors make.
I've got one last question and then we're going to wrap up here, but what rhythm should you be reviewing your key performance indicators, and when do you like know to change something? If you could give like a little bit of like a rhythm on reviewing and changing from KPIs.
So you should be looking at your numbers every single day. You should be looking at your team's performance every single day. And you know, you're meeting with your team at least once a week, right? You're meeting with your technicians at least once a week to go over those numbers. Your sales guys, you're having one-on-ones, you're doing ride-alongs. And like even with you know, job costing, I mean, you're looking and making real time corrections. And I think that the best advice I could give any contractor as far as looking at numbers and when to make changes is just remember, like, we can't change the past. We can only intervene right now. So if you're waiting to make those changes and to look at your numbers, to look at the performance of your team, to look at job costing, marketing ROI, like, it's too late at that point. There's nothing you can do. But if you are to look at it and make adequate changes as you go, you're going to drive profitability to your bottom line by saying, I recognize there's a problem. How do I train my guys differently? I recognize there's a problem. How do I be priced to be profitable? Whatever that looks like. Or I recognize there's a problem. This marketing campaign is not working. Let's reallocate the funds elsewhere to ensure that we're getting that ROI. That is what moves the needle forward. That is how you are able to gain that profitability that you so desire.
Awesome. Michelle, where can people find you, and what like is the call to action here?
Of course. So if you're interested in seeing the blueprint, talking about business coaching, attending any of our classes, or even our huge event that we have coming up in Dallas that, you know, Tim's going to be at also, you can definitely reach out to me, michelle@callprofitrocket.com.
Awesome. And the podcast is put on by HookAgency.com, HookAgency all over social. Thank you for spending the time with me.
Thank you. Yeah.